What's this cash flow looking like?
I was doing analysis in July of last year because we're doing our projections for this year. 10 properties are in the Poconos. They made $256,000.
In July?
1 month.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
What's going on, everyone? This is your host, as always, Brian Lubin, bringing you the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who have earned their freedom so you can earn freedom in your life and business today. Happy Tuesday to everyone listening to this on the live date. If you are listening to this on Tuesday, stay tuned for tomorrow because I have a special surprise for all of you. I've worked on it for about a month and I'm going to give it to all of you. So if you are listening on Thursday or another day after this, go back and look, and then obviously you'll be able to see what that surprise is. But stay tuned. Keep an eye on my social media at Action Academy Podcast. But today, we are bringing you the best of both worlds from the economic side and the philosophical side with Dr. Rachel Gainsbrew. Rachel began as a practicing pharmacist by trade, going to school for years and years to finally get this massive income, get everything that she ever wanted. And then as soon as she got it, she got the golden handcuffs. Y'all know what happens next. You can't leave because this income is too good. And this is your identity now, right? But eventually, enough was enough. Rachel decided to plan her escape and plan her exodus from this career. Now, did she just hop out of this out of thin air? Of course not. She began slowly and methodically investing in luxury short-term rentals, Airbnbs, and was able to generate enough income for her to exit this W-2 in this corporate position. In today's episode, we begin the first 20 minutes talking about the emotions that are associated with exiting a W-2. And we talk about the entire process in detail, all of the emotions you're going to feel, all of the anxiety, all of the friction, how to overcome it. The first 20 minutes is just as valuable as the rest of the show, I promise you guys. After this, we go into what she looks at for her short-term rentals, what to avoid, what to look for in her buy box, how she is making $256,000 a month, from 10 properties in the Poconos. So this woman is averaging over $3 million in revenue per year from her Airbnbs. And this was all acquired within 3 years. So she did it. You can do it too. As an added bonus, at the very end of the episode, we talk about the top 3 to 5 mistakes that Airbnb owners make. And she goes through all of them and how to avoid them. So that's equally of value. If you guys are enjoying this content, subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It's in the top right corner. Click the plus sign, and then all of these episodes will be automatically downloaded for you every single morning so that you can be able to see it at the top of your feed. So without any further ado, Rachel Gainsbrew. Rachel Gainsbrew, how are you?
I am awesome, Brian. Super excited to be here with you today.
We are representing from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes.
All ATL. Nobody calls it Hotlanta.
Except for in the news or something like that.
Except for in the news. We actually call it Atlanta. So there's no T. It's just A-L-A-N-A. Mm-hmm. Atlanta. That's what it is. I'm so excited to have you on. You've been blowing up. I've seen you everywhere. I've had probably 20 mutual friends be like, hey, you need to talk to Rachel. She needs to come on the show. And then all of a sudden you just start popping up. It's like, hey guys, we got a Zoom call with Rachel Gainsbrew. Hey guys, we got another Zoom call. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. I'm purposely not going to be on those calls so that I can do this interview with her and hear everything for the first time. So here we are. I am very excited. And we have some topics to cover. We just talked off camera and off mic about some different directions that we want to go. So I will start it with, introduce yourself to the people and let's start with your story, because I think your story is the most powerful part of all this.
Oh, thank you. And Brian, thank you so much for creating this platform and for taking the time to curate and put together such amazing content, especially for those of us who are looking to exit. And so just watching your journey, just such an inspiration. You make it very tangible, you know, and so I just thank you for being personable and just putting it out there for the rest of us who are on the struggle bus looking for a way out. So thank you. Thank you.
Isn't it funny too, how income has nothing to do with it?
It's incredible.
It's weird, isn't it? People think that maybe once they make that, maybe once they get up to that 100,000 mark, that they'll be free. Yeah.
And for others who think that once they get to the 200,000 mark, they'll be free. And so we're blessed enough to exceed that. And we still didn't quite feel free. And it's incredible how one thing can, with a snap of a finger, and you're like, oh, I'm out.
Yep.
I'm out.
Exactly. So let's talk about quitting, Rachel. Let's talk about quitting.
You want to know about quitting? Okay. Yeah. So, and what I love about the community that we're in with GoBundit is that actually one of my gals who is a physician who quit, ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to be in medicine. I wanted to have that impact. So my personality, my entire, I think, neurotransmitters were like, I am Dr. Rachel. It's medicine, and I'm a pharmacist by training, and it's medicine. To think of quitting, I thought about what others would think a little bit, maybe 2% of the time, but it was really me. It was all in me, Brian. It's who am I? Am I still Dr. Rachel? Am I still? And so that was the thing. And I kept making the excuse that it's the money. It's the money when I get to this level, and I exceeded it. But then I had about a laundry list of other excuses and other reasons why. Oh, insurance, that's a great one. The other one is, oh, I'm making a few more capital moves with purchasing property and wanting to leverage those really cheap loans when you have a W-2. And so I had a great amount of excuses. They were so good, Brian, just really good excuses with my little golden handcuffs. And then so my mantra this year was free in 23. I'm going to be free in 23. 2023 was my freedom date. But then I started to speak with my GoBundance gals and some other friends to walk me through this journey as I was seeking the great freedom. And so we had a monthly guidance and schedule. We're going to go and sit down. We're going to go out into the nation. We're going to cry. And we're going to, I had a whole like workflow of how I'm going to quit and developed it all in January and had the plans, because turns out it really wasn't the money. Of course, if you are in a position, you want to look at your numbers and all of that, cut back where you can, but it really wasn't money. It was all this emotional work that I needed to do.
So I got to pause you right there, because the growth, and I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I'm going through a lot of emotional, spiritual stuff because you know what happens. And now I can offer perspective on this, because now I'm a quitter. Like, I've left my W-2 and Brian, 5 months ago, you would have just said, oh yeah, we're going to go sit out in the woods and cry once a month. I would have been like, that doesn't make any sense to me. I get it now because of the anxiety and the friction associated with changing your identity. Ooh,
that part.
Let's keep hitting on that, because especially in the medical profession. So I was a corporate sales guy. Mm-hmm. That was my thing. I am great at this. This is my crowning achievement. I was like, I'm the top guy.
Yeah.
And to go from that to, okay, it's just me now. There's no one else that's going to applaud you. You're not going to get the awards, the trophies. It's just you now. And if you fail, it's all on you. Talk about that a little bit, because the emotions that come with it, nobody talks about this, but it's a transition.
Oh, it is a transition. And there's a guilt associated. Mm-hmm. A little girl from Haiti who was raised in the inner city of Miami. Mom and dad, they sacrificed for me to be here.
To go to school,
to be in this country, this great, amazing country, for better or for worse. It's not perfect, but this is the great country. This is a phenomenal country. Sacrificed me to get here. I was born there, got here, excelled in academia. am I taking their sacrifices in vain? So all the voices in my head. So my identity, then this guilt trip. And these are all conversations I'm having with myself. And so I had this mapped out for the whole year where that journey was going to take me. And then finally, at the end of the year, I would put in my resignation letter at the end of 2022 and I would quit. Well, healthcare burnout is so real, Brian. And sometimes when you're in that, what is it called? The analogy, like the boiling pot or whatever.
The frog in the pot. Yeah. How do you cook a frog? You boil it slow and it doesn't even notice that it's cooking.
That part right there. That is that part. The part. And I was that frog. And then one day, we were already really struggling, overworked, understaffed, just hit more metrics, but our quality of life was depreciating. And what was great about starting with short-term rentals and starting investing, the income was coming in. I just wasn't really all that into overworking for less pay and putting others' health at risk. Over someone would be called in to do more with less. I would say, really, I don't think she should do that. I started to speak up. And there's a power that comes with you not relying on a W-2 wholly for your whole existence, right? And so I started to speak up. And then one day I received an email stating that these are the new initiatives we're going to put forth. And there were a few other things that I just didn't agree with in February. I had all the way till December of 2022.
That doesn't work like that.
Life doesn't work that way. February 2022, got that email. I didn't make it 2 months into the year. And I said, peace out, I'm out. And all of that identity angst, all of that just went by the wayside. Because ultimately, if you really wanted to, Brian, could you not go back to somewhere in corporate and say, hey, I'm going to apply for a job again? You know, I'm like, if you really wanted to, you could always go back.
Oh my God. Yes. Thank you for saying that. Everyone's got such a huge fear about making the big leap, right? Like Gay Hendricks, big leap. And everyone's so afraid of it. And my girlfriend even. So we're about to go travel and do all this stuff. And everyone thinks that obviously that's the coolest thing ever. Like, why would there be any anxiety or fear or scarcity associated with that? And it's a transition. We're leaving everything that we know and find comfort in. And I told my girlfriend, I said, Bella, hey, what is the worst case scenario? Like, we come home and get jobs. High paying jobs. What are we doing right now? So our worst case scenario is literally our present day reality.
Right. Baseline. Exactly. So there's nothing to fear. And I just want to give the audience permission to dream, permission to step out on a limb. Permission to know that it's going to be okay. And I had wish I understood that earlier on, because I would have left a little bit sooner or even cut back a little bit sooner to the point where I didn't start to really hate the day to day.
I love that. You're familiar with Jason, right? Jason Dries?
Yeah.
I've seen you in that community.
Yeah. Yep.
He said something that was super interesting to me and I've adopted it to where he talks about how you have a graph on the y-axis, the vertical axis is growth, the x-axis is time. And so people normally will grow slowly, gradually over time, maybe 2-5% they grow. And it's a slow transition. As you transition, as you grow, there are also problems that come with success, but people are handle them in bite-sized chunks. And then so he said, whenever you in success, all of a sudden you have 10 years worth of success in 2 months. But then you also have to integrate 10 years worth of problems.
Yeah.
That's where we're at right now. So how's your integration going?
It's interesting. My new boss, she's tough.
She's pointing at her.
She points to self. Man, when you were describing your calendar a little bit, I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. How do you get roped into back-to-back-to-back calls like this?
Yeah.
But it's exciting because, first of all, what I'm finding is that I'm able to be more creative. The creativity is coming out, the ability to just explore and create things without feeling completely depleted and wiped out by the end of the day. So that part is great. I am struggling with calendar management and using the word no. Learning to say no, and that's all on me. And so what I've done is I've actually hired several people onto my team. I do have a new EA, and so she's helping me manage certain projects, but ultimately she will be managing my calendar. And so we're coming up with SOPs right now for my calendar. I told, believe it or not, I always need a lunch time at this time. I need breaks in between. And I feel as though someone who's unemotional about things can plug and chug that. Everyone knows, talk to Ashley. If you need to get on Rachel's calendar, talk to Ashley, because Rachel will overbook herself. I've got meetings overlapping. It's a hot mess. I think I can make this happen. I think, but if it's someone else looking in, they could be a little bit more judicious with that. And so that's one thing that I'm working on as well. But I was running a small coaching practice for those who are looking to get started with short-term rentals. And within 2 months of quitting, I've generated over, I want to say 10x what I was able to generate last year when I started.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Within 2 months.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll use that as our hook. We'll use that as our hook right now. First off, before we do that question, your EA, is that a domestic EA or is that a virtual assistant?
Yeah, she... Interestingly enough, virtual, as in she doesn't come to my office every day.
Sure.
But she lives in Georgia also, like us, yeah. Which is great. Yeah. So she's here in the US.
Cool. Yeah. I've got one right now that's working from, I think, Turkey or something.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's a transition. That's another thing that people don't really talk about is they say, yeah, just SOP it out. And then you have to be like, okay, now I need to transition to the identity of someone that has SOPs. Huh. Okay. How do I systematize my life when you've never thought about that before? And yeah. That's another sticky situation where you're like, okay, what is my time best spent on? That's a rough one. What answers have you come up with there?
Okay. You want me to be truthful?
Right.
Hair appointment at, you know, that part. Look, if my hair is not on fleek, I'm not showing up the way I'm just going to be. Brian. Well, gym, I bet no guests have ever told you that before. So I'm telling you today, if my hair and my nails are not where they need to be, I am not showing up in the way that I need to show up.
Self-love. And that's for everyone. That's the gym for me. I make sure after this, I have an hour blocked off because I need to get my gym in.
Yep.
It's something for everyone.
That's a part of it too. I need that carved out and I need to prioritize it because it's one of the first things that I will let go. It's one of the first things that I will let go because for me, there's flexibility there. But no, don't let that go because once you've done that part, you feel a certain way. And there's nothing like feeling confident and ready to conquer the day. And so that's a part of it too. So part of it is that self-love. How do I need to show up as the CEO of my small but mighty business? And part of it is my health. It's having those lunch hours carved out. We're not quite there yet. And we don't have all of that in place yet, but really getting strict about that calendar so that I can be the most productive that I can be. And I read in an article a couple of weeks ago, after 25 hours per week, your productivity reduces. Map that out, work your pants off for 25 hours, but the rest of the week, you're probably not really moving the needle the way you think you are. Yeah.
Are you like me to where now you find yourself working after you've left your W-2, after you've left your profession? Do you find yourself working from 6 a.m. till 9 p.m. like me?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like work. It fires you up and it's super fun.
Yeah.
But there's a guilt associated with taking time for yourself where you're like, okay, this is all on me now. Our work ethics got us to where we were before with our vertical income, which is what we call corporate income. That's our work ethic. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, whenever I stop working, I feel guilty. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice on that? It's rough.
It is. And I wish I had the answer to that. But again, it's going in with a plan and creating those SOPs.
And outsourcing.
Because there's more to life than the grind, there's more to life than working. There's more. And then again, the productivity, because if I'm working that late, am I really giving? You should see the spelling errors that happen after a certain hour during the day.
It's got to be a statistic.
Spelling errors, the posts that go out, and it's a hot mess. It's, So if that doesn't tell you, maybe you should have, you're doing too much. You're doing, right. I said, girl, you are doing too much. And that's what it is.
So let's speak on that. So instead of doing too much, let's talk about less is more. Because that is your mantra. That's your guiding light in your business. And we'll get into your business here, the Airbnbs, the real estate. Talk about less is more.
Absolutely. And I wish I came at this approach from a philosophical, intelligent, me and Socrates were talking. No, it was a mama with a whole husband, two kids and three dogs, trying to figure out how to make those dollars stretch and still perform. And so after doing all of the digging, all of the research, looking at every single real estate approach that was available to me at the time, because really I wanted to invest, but I couldn't figure out which vehicle to use. I landed on real estate, Bitcoin, all that stuff. I didn't quite understand NFTs. So I landed on real estate in 2019 and I did the analysis. And when I looked at the time that was associated with different aspects of investing, and then the revenue that was produced with different aspects of investing for me at the time, wholesaling, which is easy to get into, easy, and you're going to start making all these checks. I was, after really digging in, I was like, no, that's 80 hours a week. That's another job.
And you got no assets.
Fixing. So obviously, let me do the next best thing that's not going to take a lot of time. I'm watching HGTV in 30 minutes. I've got a $40,000 check, right? Yeah, no, that's not realistic. Short-term rentals was it for me, specifically luxury short-term rentals. And what I found there, that the gross ROI on luxury short-term rentals far exceeded buy and hold long-term rentals, far exceeded any other real estate strategy that I was looking at the time, really. Anywhere from 3X to 15X is what I had projected the gross monthly revenue would be. And so I went with short-term rentals and I quickly identified all you needed was one or two to just be outrageously profitable if you are doing the analysis correctly.
Talk about that and talk about looking at cash flow, which your clarity is all already a huge thing. People will talk about what your crystal clear criteria, like Brandon Turner would say. And then, so you're already crystal clear about what you want your cash flow to be, right? Because you're like, hey, I got to replace this doctor income, which is substantial. Yeah. And so your goal is purely cash flow. So talk about your ideas of less is more as opposed to just like door count, because you and I were talking about that and it's a vanity metric at the end of the day. Me and my buddy were talking and we were like, hey, really? If we just had 10 to 20 houses, single family homes paid off by the time we're 50, like that would really do it.
Yeah.
That'd bring in like $250,000, $300,000.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. A year. Yeah. So talk about that a little bit and coming up with that kind of change in your frame.
What's interesting about short-term rentals, and I was looking at it from the approach of, say, I would cash flow $10K per month on a luxury property or a larger single family home in a great suburban area. And so that's really what my goal was, about $10K per month, okay, on these properties. And whenever I would put in an offer or put one under contract, that would be what I was aiming for. Per property, correct.
All right, listen to that, people. Stop telling me about your grand mission to get $10,000 in cash flow and you're getting like 900 units to get $10,000. She's doing it per property. Continue, Rachel. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, come back to me if you're multitasking, guys, because this is it right here. And so the first one we purchased was back in 2019. It was a single family home, four bedrooms, really great area in Georgia. In my own backyard, there was a whole story behind that. That one, we started off, it was generating about $8,000 per month gross. And there were expenses. I didn't quite hit the 10K mark, but I already felt like we were winning because long-term rent in that area was about, I want to say $1,500 a month Our mortgage was $1,200 a month. Already we were winning. The next property was not too far away from that property. And so we purchased this next property. And that property, did I say, was $290K? Not terrible.
Oh, okay. When you're saying luxury properties, yeah, I was about to ask that, because with a $1,200 mortgage, I was like, in my mind, when you say luxury properties, I'm thinking about you buying like some three-story Savannah townhouse.
Yeah. And it could be that too. But where my bread and butter lies is 5 to 8 bedrooms. The bigger homes, I love those. And I'll tell you why in a moment. So the next home was a 6-bedroom home. We bought that one for $460,000. So we really did an uptick there. I was projecting hitting my 10K per month and then more. But here's the story. And this is, I think the story is actually my claim to fame. It's the one that got us on Netflix. This home, once I set it up on the platform, I added the dynamic pricing tool to it. Again, a little girl from Haiti, I was thinking to myself, you know what? I wonder if it will make 8,000 or 9,000 or 10,000 a month, because I was going to put it on a monthly program. There's those first couple of months as I onboarded my new cleaning team. I turned on the dynamic pricing tool. I use a tool called Price Labs, and it has artificial intelligence, all of that in there, where it's evaluating the neighborhood occupancy in hotels, short-term rentals, all of that good stuff. And then you have to train it though, right? Mm-hmm. First couple of days you're training it. It starts out, it'll either overshoot outrageously or undershoot outrageously. And so you need to know where your baseline is going to be so that you can set it up correctly. So I set it up, and of course it overshot outrageously. I was laughing. I was like, oh my gosh, $28,000 for 30 nights. That's insane. So let me turn it off and start training it. Before I turned it off, it got booked.
What?
It got booked for $28,000 for 30 nights. The next month, it got booked for $15,000 for 30 nights. The next month, it got booked for $22,000 for 20 nights. It's been averaging about $21,000 per month.
Okay. And this is the, which property is this? Is this the 212 or the 462? Okay, 462. What area is this?
Peachtree City.
Peachtree City. Okay.
I haven't even touched the Poconos and Rosemary Beach yet. All you need is one or two, Brian.
Okay. So talk to me about this. Because what? All right. So talk to me about your strategy. So you have a 4 to 6 bedroom. Okay.
Five. That was the first one I sold it and we went bigger. So 5 to 8 bedroom. And the reason I love the 5 to 8 bedrooms, Brian, is because I get to host multi-generational, multi-families traveling with children and pets. That's my avatar. And imagine this, you, your girlfriend, your families, all you have about 4 or 5 paying adult units that I can host. So I feel comfortable charging a nightly rate of anywhere from $800 to $2,800 per night is what we charge on our properties, because we have large families with adults who are going to be paying. So for you, it's still a good deal because you're not in a hotel. You're in a big old house and you're together. Game room, pool, fire pit. And for me, it's fabulous. Again, a little girl from Haiti, I'm like, who would ever pay $28,000? So when that happened, my whole life was blown wide open.
And this is, so you specifically rent them monthly?
Not necessarily. So that one, if it's rented for monthly, we have individuals who are coming in for the filming industry. The first guest was actually the executive director of a major TV show. I cannot disclose, but executive director was the first one. But guess what? The subsequent ones were actually insurance companies, honestly. Allstate Insurance, they were placing families in our units. Progressive Insurance, we're placing families in our units. Either their home caught on fire or their home, there was a flood. And so they would place them in there anywhere from 30 days to 3 months to, I had one stay for 12 months paying those rates.
Is there any kind of proactive work that you're doing to get in touch with these insurance companies or anything?
Now I am.
Yeah, I was about to say. So
now I am.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay, so first off, let's describe the property. Let's get a mental image here. So I'm visualizing it as something nice, but I'm still trying to wrap my head around somebody paying like 15 to $28,000. Yeah. So what are you looking for aesthetically? So we're looking for the 5-day bedrooms for the family, multi-generational, that's your avatar. What specific areas, what are you looking for in your areas that you're buying in? What's your buy box for region and for the aesthetic of the property?
So for me, the property's aesthetic on the exterior has to have some kind of curb appeal. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Okay.
But more importantly, not that particular property, the whole neighborhood has to have some kind of curb appeal. Otherwise, I cannot market it as a luxury property. Because understand this, modern luxury is not the accumulation of things. We don't need a big old grandiose fountain in the front. Mm-hmm. Modern luxury is individuals who want to reconnect with nature, who want to reconnect with one another, who want a convenient, great communication, curated stay. They want to live like a local. Yes, I have organic honey sticks that are local brought in for them. Yes, I will provide a charcuterie board. So these are things that, yeah, you can do that. But it's not that these homes are $800,000. What they are worth, $800,000 to $1.7 million. But going in, that was not my purchase price. So my buy box right now is larger homes, 5 bedrooms plus, in a community with great curb appeal if it's going to be in a suburban area. But if I'm going to be in a mountain or a lake or a beach region, it doesn't necessarily have to be in a community with great schools or anything like that. And so I'm looking for spacious areas in the backyard if I can manage that, because I can go in and add in my fire pit, add in my outdoor fireplace. In the mountain regions, I do want a pool and a hot tub if possible. If it's not both possible, I do want a space for a hot tub. In the beach areas, I'm looking for a place that I can add a pool or a place that has a pool. Those are pretty much my buy boxes. But for me, it's my budget, right? If I say, okay, my budget for this next acquisition is $600,000, for instance, then I go into my data, and I'm huge on data. I look all over the US. I don't focus too much on the far west because I want to be able to get there within 5 hours if I have to, and I haven't had to. But I like the east, the northeast and southeast area. I do some middle America areas, but I'm looking for somewhere that if I can get a lake view, that's great. If not, that's okay. Because when I create the stay of the home, when I design it, the home is the thing. I just had a student purchase a 13 bedroom home in Orlando. That, you know, that home, once we're done decking it out, that is going to be the attraction. Yes, they can go to Disney, but we're going to create that, you know, whole stay to continue. It's going to be Disney in continuation in the home. And so the home is the thing. And that's where I think a lot of people make mistakes with short-term rentals. They're just putting on grandma's sofa. Don't try me with grandma's sofa. We need to
create an experience.
Yeah, create a whole experience. Yeah.
What? So is this a niche on Airbnb? I'm thinking about it. Is this a niche that's like kind of underserved? Is that larger home?
I think after COVID, after some of the travel restrictions were lifted, it definitely is a niche that's underserved. I think that being pet friendly is also a niche that's underserved, because I wasn't pet friendly. I'm like, I'm luxury. I'm not going to be pet friendly. I've got my own dogs. They don't get to go to my rentals. I got my own dogs. I don't let them into the rentals. So I was not going to be pet friendly, but we kept getting asked. After the 8th person asks you, could I please bring Fufu with me? I said, okay, wait a minute, this is a lot. So I called the different boarding facilities in the area. And when I got the price point to board Fufu for 30 days, it was on.
Added on. Okay.
Absolutely. And not 100%, but like maybe added on a 50% for the pet. And so speaking to my revenue manager, he will tell you, I do have someone who I reach out to. I was like, could you look at this? And like a consultant. He says, my properties are at the top, like 99th percentile above everyone else, because I'm able to peacock. I don't compete. People are competing by price with so-and-so. I don't compete by price. I add so much freaking value in my properties that once you see it, you said, okay, I'm going to go there because she's got me covered. You don't have to guess. I got you.
All right. So I'm mind blown right now. So talk about some of the strategies that you're using to provide value to make your listings irresistible in comparison to the other ones.
Photos tell the story. Okay. If I can't get you to click on my photo, I've already lost. Okay. Photos tell the story. So professional photos are it. And when I look in my markets and I'm scrolling up and down or left and right to see what kind of properties are in this market, mine needs to stand out from the fray, whatever it takes. The first one may be the most glorious swimming pool. Well, everyone has like a blue hint photo with the pool. I'm gonna peacock. I may do a hot tub and make the sky a little bit misty because I need you to see something different so that you can tap on my listing. So photos tell the story. Then in my copy, the copywriting, that's mm-hmm. the second part. I'm very specific about my copywriting. It has to feel welcoming and it has to give a call to action personally. People need to be told what to do. I read other people's copy. I do it for a living. And 3-bedroom, 2-bath, this a real estate rental.
Boilerplate. Yeah, very boilerplate. Yeah.
Mine is come stay with me, book here so I can take care of you. Book here. Wow. Amongst all of the amenities, we have luxury this, your mattress. I even described the mattress if I went all out on it. If my linens are Brook linen, you better believe you're going to read that in the welcome copy message. Come and enjoy some soft Brook linens and kick your feet up on such and such restoration hardware. So really give them a picture of a story and a journey. Readability is huge as well. You're not going to see paragraphs upon paragraphs in there. It's going to be a little paragraph, but so all of that is the intro, right? Mm-hmm. The property. And as soon as they inquire, that communication is everything. It needs to be timely. It needs to be attentive. It needs to be, the responses need to make sense. I know a lot of people automate and we have some things that are automated, but we have to communicate with the guests. We have to set the tone of what that trip is about and make sure that we're taken care of. And we pick up the phone sometimes to talk to them and just make sure that we can serve them and serve them well.
But you can do that with the fewer amount of properties. If you have 20 properties, you can't do that. But if you have 3, you can do that. That's not that much of a time commitment. So you've got 2 of these. How many of these do you have?
Now we're up to 18 because we actually expanded partially with a partnership.
Okay.
We purchased a few more. We went into a partnership and then we're actually helping some homeowners who want to get in, but they're not quite there yet. Say guests are responding, they're doing a surgery or performing some type of procedure. So we do co-hosting for certain homeowners, but we only select and enroll properties that meet our avatar in our program just because it's streamlined that way.
Okay. So what is this? So you've got 18 now. What's this cash flow looking like?
I was doing analysis in July of last year because we're doing our projections for this year. 10 properties are in the Poconos. They made $256,000
in July.
1 month.
She got this smile.
I keep trying to tell people they're not listening.
So obviously it's seasonal and it waxes and wanes. But I mean, even if you call it
6-figure months, period.
Even if you call it 200,000 a month, that's 2.4 million.
We made 3.1, I want to say, in when we closed our books last year.
Off of 18 properties.
Yes.
Okay.
Price points were $175,000 to $495,000. But those prices aren't available today, but that's
for sure.
Purchased around 2018 through 21.
And this is, so this is 3 years.
Yes.
3 years, 3.2 million.
Top of line.
There we go. There's the podcast title. Okay. So let's play devil's advocate to finish this out. So because in this show, I want to be able to just absolutely decimate any reason anybody would say anything. So let's play devil's advocate. All right, Rachel, sounds great. That's great for you. Fantastic. Today's market's not like that anymore. And the prices are super overinflated. Airbnb is way more saturated. We got HOAs screaming at us. Atlanta's cracking down on Airbnbs and the economy's going to shit. What do you say about that, Rachel? Think that you can make your $3.2 million on me? What do you say to that?
Okay, Brian, I know the sky is falling and all, And you know what? I love that because that's all I hear all day. That's sure. all I hear.
Especially in the luxury market. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so what you need to look at is how do you reposition yourself in an economy where there are changes. And so I never anticipated doing a co-hosting model. I never anticipated doing arbitrage. We have two that are arbitrage where we're renting to rent. And so that's an approach. Can you pivot when times have changed, right? You have to be able to pivot. If you are, say you're an investor and you don't know how to pivot, you're not going to last for long. You have to be able to pivot.
Multiple exit strategies.
Multiple exit strategies as well as different investment approaches. So I say I'm a Georgia girl. I'm just going to invest in Georgia. Say Georgia properties may not be in my budget. I'm going to look at the whole U.S. I'm putting in offers in Texas. I'm putting in offers in Western North Carolina. I am going to look at the hot markets where I know I can generate the revenue and say that particular property there is in a at a price point I'm not quite comfortable with. I'm going to go to two neighborhoods over and see what I can do there. You can always leverage the fact that you're in the vicinity of the Smokies, of Blue Ridge. You're in the vicinity. If you can curate a stay at that property, they don't care that it's 30 minutes away. You know, you make sure you have full disclosure. You make sure you're well stocked. You can go outside of that area and close on a property that's $230,000, like my student just did a couple of weeks ago. That's in the Blue Ridge area that is going to generate her fabulous cash flow. Okay. So secondary, tertiary markets. Expand your reach, expand your markets, expand your mind. Zig, you know, when everyone's zigging, you zag. You go a little bit further out, you're going to find something. And so understand the numbers. Saturation is actually an economic term. Saturation means, and I'm not an economist, I'm not a financial advisor, but generally speaking, it means, yes, you have an increased volume of the product and then the price is going down. But what I'm seeing is demand. There is an increased volume of product, but my prices are going up. They're going up. You need to stand out from the crowd so that you can continue to peacock above the crowd. Don't do what everyone else is doing. What value can you offer? What value proposition can you add to your space? Can you connect with a local small business who's a private chef and just add them on there and say, hey, we also provide private chef services. That person you're getting in, you can have a meal. And you can split the charge with them, add a little bit more into the nightly rate if they want the private chef. Can you provide a driver to grab them from the airport and provide a little bit more value so they're not thinking about that? Can you provide a car service? Well, some people can. Think about those things. How do you add more value? What is it that this avatar is looking for? Is it on a lake? Can you add kayaks? Can you add a paddleboard? What can you do to make yourself stand out from the crowd?
And so it's almost like the Alex Hormozy, like $100 million offer strategy where you're like, hey, like we're not battling on price. We're battling on value here.
Absolutely.
Like we're trying to, oh my God.
Competition, Brian. I kid you not. I have no competition.
Okay. All right. So I've got two questions. We'll try to do them rapid fire here just for the sake of time.
Yeah.
So one question is, I'm curious about your capital allocation right now. So if you're making... And I'm just going off an assumption here. This is just where my mind goes. Tell me if I'm completely wrong or what you're doing. But like my mind goes, okay, cool. So now we're flirting in an area to where the economic forecast isn't looking like that fantastic. And you're making that type of top line revenue. Are you reinvesting when you're doing this? Are you still highly leveraging and scale, put as little percent down? Or are you starting to pay off some of the equity of some of the properties just to have a little bit of cushion? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. So actually what I'm doing is repositioning my property. Okay. So if I have a property that I felt didn't quite perform the way I needed it to perform or hasn't been performing. And the reason is if you have older homes with short-term rentals, newer is better. I mean, if you can renovate, that's going to be better. And so I'm looking at that. I have actually offloaded. We're at 22. We offloaded some properties. We're building up a nest egg and we are actually building on the beach and sending the capital there towards the beach. I don't have a strategy right now to pay down debt. I'm getting into more I'm buying more property right now. And the way I see it, especially with my runway, I think I have a longer runway. I hope I do. With my runway, what I'm seeing is that my guests, they're more than ever paying for the expenses of the property. I would say there's about 35 to 40% of the revenue that goes back into the property, whether it's for the debt service, whether it's to replenish things, to make some improvements. And of course, to take care of my team, my cleaners. I do have a maintenance person that sticks around with us, and I have virtual assistants that help with the communication side of things. So I don't communicate with my guests anymore. Every now and then I'll pop in, but I have the virtual assistants. Those are typically, I think they're all, yeah, they're all in Vietnam, actually. Those
70%. That's a 70% profit margin.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. So you're just operating at a freaking bananas level. Okay. This is awesome. I'm running out of time, so I can't ask you all the questions. We'll maybe do a part two in the future. What do people get wrong? A lot of people get into Airbnb. A lot of people are like, oh, Rachel, it sounds great. I'm trying to get into Airbnb with 20% Pareto law, right? 20% make 80% of the money. What did the 80% get wrong? Because there's a lot of people that crash and burn in Airbnb. What are some mistakes that people make that you can say to avoid for maybe somebody that's, okay, I love what Rachel's saying, I want to jump in. What can they avoid?
I think the first thing that they get wrong, and there are different things to get wrong along the way, but not really analyzing the deal before going in, not really understanding the numbers, not really understanding the market. Just going off of assumptions of what others told you that you can possibly make, you have to understand your own numbers. This is where I don't want you outsourcing this. This part is the most important.
The buy.
And a lot of them. Yeah. Understanding the analysis, because, and then they come to me to try to fix something that's completely broken. And one big part of the analysis is, what is the occupancy rate of this market? Are there travelers coming to this market? And there's a free exercise that I do on my Facebook Lives, is plug this address in here, add the bedrooms, add the bathrooms, add the number of guests, and you will get a number that spits out that tells you a percentage. And if it's under 50%, we do not invest there. That's called high risk. It has to be 50% or higher for the occupancy rate. That part, that's where we start. And then I go in and I granularly analyze more and more. And then I pay for data into different tools to analyze more and more, because when I'm putting money on the table, I'm going to pay to get more data to make sure I'm doing what I need to do. Mm-hmm. Once I've identified a market and I say, okay, this is a great market, this is my buy box, I can just rinse and repeat that process. But if you come to me and you just purchased a home and I plug it into the tools, the free tools that are out there, and it tells me a 27% occupancy rate, my suggestion to you is, let's figure out how we can sell it, because no, boo, it is not going to work out. And that's where I see a lot of people, they come to me by the time they're like, we're not getting bookings. There are no travelers to this particular region.
Okay, that makes sense. So next question, for time's sake, what's next? What's your vivid vision? Where are you taking this in 3 to 5 years?
Ooh, I love it. So I am more than content with the size of the portfolio.
Sure.
I think we're going to continue to reposition and look at how to continue to be profitable. We want to own less and make more. Just saying, that's where I'm at. Pruning down the ones that aren't doing great, adding more that are doing phenomenally, and teaching others to do it. Because although we did have rapid growth, thanks to collaborating with GoBundance folks, and we were able to grow rapidly, but I want the message for everyone who's listening to be, less is more. All you need is one or two. Really, especially if you have a W-2, once you kick it to the curb, yeah, continue to grow. But I don't want the overwhelm and the paralysis to come in, because it is work. It is not passive income. It's not passive investing. It is active. So that's why
we need to cut that, because I talked to so many people on the show, and this is literally my entire life now. So it's like, the goal is to do what you want, when you want, with who you want. So it's just about, lifestyle design is as important as cash flow when it comes to all of this.
Absolutely.
So now we've got everything designed up, and it's just, it's cool. It's cool to watch. Like, I love seeing all of this, and there's just so many different ways to go about this. Cause think about how much mental space this takes up for people, that they're like, oh, I need to make this much. And it's always $10,000. That's where everyone starts at. Is they say, I want to make $10,000 to do what?
Yeah.
What does your life look like now that you have that coming in? Do you want to scale? Do you want to grow? Do you want to travel? Do you want to spend more time with your kids? What do you want?
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. So where can people find you? Where can people reach out to you with all the 10,000 questions that they're going to have?
Oh, I love it. You know what? Download my free gift. I have a gift called 75gems.com. If you go there, go to 75gems.com. You're going to get my free top US cities with the highest profitability. I'm a spreadsheets girl. It's going to be a spreadsheet. It's not going to be cute. It's going to be a spreadsheet with a little video to show you how to use it. This is my list for 2022. And whenever I'm in acquisitions mode, I refer back to that list because it's a list that I curated with data miners and we put it together because that was the top question that I kept getting asked. If my city that I'm picking is wrong, but so where should I invest, Rachel? What city? Mm-hmm. And that's how that I gave birth to that back in 2021. And now I released 2022 not too long ago. So check that out on 75gems.com. And then you'll get redirected at the end. You'll see my little Facebook group. We can connect there and just message me. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Insta, LinkedIn. Yep.
I love it. I love it. That's a heck of an offer. So everyone go to 75 gems. So like literally 75gems.
75gems.com. Yeah.
Perfect. And then we will have that in the show description and we will have all of this linked in the Action Academy newsletter, of course, because all of you need to subscribe to that and go get your free Excel tracker for these top Airbnbs. Because now if you're listening to this, you've gotten a lot of value today. Yeah. You've gotten a lot of value today. So Rachel, I appreciate it. We're definitely going to have multiple shows down the path, but I love your philosophies here. I love how you're going about this. I love your mindset about this. Aww. Because we need to keep pushing the narrative that you don't have to just get $200 per door.
Oh, like,
that does not exist anymore. And then also, even with this podcast, I'm like, hey, let's put everything online.
Yeah.
And you can print out, like, you would be shocked at what this show produces. So I'm just saying, find out whatever you're passionate about. For Rachel, she was like, hey, short-term rentals. This is my thing, luxury short-term rentals. Now she pops it out. Now all of a sudden it's another revenue stream. What are you passionate about? Put it online. Go make your money. Get out of that job you hate. I love this. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. This has been Rachel and Brian with the Action Academy podcast, signing off.
You've been listening to the Action Academy podcast, helping you to choose what you want, with who you want, when you want.
You've been given the gift of freedom. Don't turn your back on that.
We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some practical and useful information. Make sure to like, rate, and review the show. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hook up with us on social media. Remember, financial independence is freedom.
The flags of freedom fly. Freedom fly.